Lehrer's & Company is based in Scobeyville, New Jersey, and North Garden, Virginia. It's there in Virginia where they source their apples, and they ferment the cider then to be distilled into their select apple brandy and apple jack. In last week's episode 333, we spoke to Lisa Lehrer Dunn, the global ambassador, chief operating officer, and eighth generation Lehrer to be part of this family-owned company. In this week's episode, we'll have Lisa back again and her son Gerard, who is a 10th generation Lehrer now working at the company. We're going to be talking a bit about the product line, how Applejack is made. We're going to be talking about the oak barrels and the Virginia-based distillery in North Garden. And there's going to be a little bonus content, too, with Larry Lehrer's. So do stay tuned for all of that in this here episode 334 of Cider Chat. Hey, 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 my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. If you are new to this here podcast, well, welcome aboard the ride out and about into Ciderville. There's just so much good stuff happening right now, both in my special spot of Ciderville and in the rest of the world. For instance, this week, the Ross Ciderfest is taking place, kicking off on Friday. On Thursday night, they have their Cider Club, and guess who they're going to be having there? Yes, our friend Arjun, who's coming over from the Netherlands to go to Ross-on-Wye, hang out with the Johnsons, drink a lot of cider with all those folks, and talk about Elegas Cidery. And I had Arjun on the podcast, and so I will put a link in the show notes so you can listen to that conversation. I'm just so super stoked to see all the good stuff happening in the Netherlands. I mean, we have Marcel also in the Netherlands. He's south of where Elegas Cidery is based, and that's De Jenner. It's in the area like north of Belgium, doing some wicked cool stuff. As we say, that's a Massachusetts phrase, wicked cool. It's a compliment. Don't worry, Marcel, it's a compliment. There's good stuff happening over in the Netherlands, and it's going to be at Ross Ciderfest. Dang, man, I wish I could be there. Oh, well, next time. So much going on. And then there's even more stuff happening in all the different sites around the world. You know, folks in the Southern Hemisphere, they are on the flip side of winter, now moving into spring. And I know that must feel really good to everybody down there. So cheers to you as we're on the other side of that up here in the Northern Hemisphere, seeing our summer apples coming in and preparing for fall, winter cider making action. It's happening. In fact, this week, I'm going to be finally recording with Fermentis, who is a sponsor of this here podcast. So allow me to tell you a little bit about that. But first, let's take a pause and listen to this little ditty from my cousin Jay and I.
Walking through the orchard.
This week, we thought it was going to happen last week, but it's this week. I'm finally having a sit-down conversation with Anne at Fermentis. We're going to be talking about technical aspects of yeast and how it impacts one's fermentation of cider. So this is kind of a critical issue, isn't it? Because it's all about the yeast, baby. The yeast eats the sugar, converts it into alcohol, and you have to have happy yeast in order to make lovely cider. There's all these little particular things about it that can really make your cider go haywire if you don't manage it correctly. I mean, I like to think of myself as a yeasty mama because I used to make bread when I was a kid, and then, you know, cider making and fermenting in general just came naturally to me because I knew how to like get the yeast going. But there are things that even if you think you know it all, there's always something more to learn. And I think that is the beauty of cider making. So we're going to get down with Anne this week, and that episode will be rolling out in a wee bit. In the meanwhile, don't wait for that episode to come out. You could check out everything that Fermentis has to offer now so you can start planning for your fall cider making and getting your yeast on order. Do not wait till the last minute. Do not wait until you're like going out that day to your crusher to get the apples and put them in the press, because by then, once you press the juice, the wild yeast are going to be taking over. And sometimes they're good neighbors to have, and sometimes the wild yeast can really make your cider go wonky. in a way that you may not want it to happen. So check out Fermentis. You go to fermentis.com and you'll see four different types of yeast that they provide specific for cider makers. And they do have more. You could check out some of the wine yeast they have and some of the beer yeast they have. It's all good, but they do have four specific ones for cider for those of us who want to stay in the track. Again, go to fermentis.com. Big tip of the glass to both Dave and Marcia, who just joined the Cider Chat Patreon page and became patrons of this here podcast. Dave wrote, "Hey, Rhea, it was a real pleasure to meet you. Marcia had a blast getting to know you, and I was tickled pink that you are as approachable and likable in person as you are on Cider Chat." That's good. It's good to know that you see me as being authentic. I do try. I ask about how folks find the podcast, and he says that Marcia found it on an app called Podcast Go, and she was looking for things to listen to on a very long weekend drive. It was like 4.5 hours, so they were able to like start at episode 100 and catch up. Really like the early episodes on Keeving. I'll put a link in the show notes to that one. And some of the interviews with orchardists. And Dave writes, "Through nothing other than cultural chauvinism, I tend to enjoy UK interviews more, but listen to everything." And that's because, well, Dave is a Brit. I asked about the journey that he's had with cider, and he wrote, "It's been a long one. I got a taste for cider at a young age while in college. My favorite tipple at the time being something called Scrumpy Jack. It's a brand that goes back several centuries, and the ABV changed over the years, and was first brewed in 1727 by Simon's Cider and English Wine Company of Stoke Lacey in Herefordshire." Super cool. Elizabeth, if you're listening at the Museum of Cider, I know you'll enjoy that, along with all my other Herefordshire and English friends there. He goes on with, "I'm attempting to grow the cider fruit as my real passion. Part of the driver for wanting to do that was reading so much literature over the last century, talking about orchards, getting grubbed up, and standing on top of Glastonbury Tor back in 2015 in Somerset, and being disappointed to see very few remaining orchards on the Somerset flats. Cider fruit, in my experience, are also bastard hard to grow, at least growing UK varieties in the States, which I get a perverse pleasure in attempting." I swear every time I see the sorry state of my Kinks and Blacks. Oh man, you're not alone. "My other guilty pleasure is collecting some of the historical Pomonas. Although I'm a computer science guy, the social history of cider making and historical varieties is a passion. I asked if he liked any particular styles of cider, and it's no surprise that he wrote, West Country style ciders, for the most part, bitter rather than astringent, but I'll try anything in order to train my palate. Prefer the smaller craft producers, but Brown's Lane by Crispin is my current guilty pleasure." I asked if there was any particular topic that he likes to hear on the podcast, and he wrote, "The orchard-related stuff I particularly like, but please keep it eclectic. Maine Apple Camp helped reinforce that everyone brings something different to the brew." Thank you so much, Dave, for writing all those kind words and sharing your journey and allowing me to share it here on Cider Chat. If you don't know what we're talking about when I say patron, well, Dave and Marcia are now patrons of Cider Chat via the Cider Chat Patreon page, which is a website that helps content creators like myself allow us to keep on doing our work, and in this case, keep delivering this podcast every week for the past 7 years. Imagine that. That's a passion, I'll tell you, no doubt. You can become a patron too. Just Google Patreon, is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and write Cider Chat. Should bring you right to the page. There's all these different levels that you could join on the Patreon page, or you could also hit the donate button at ciderchat.com. Coming up in November is Saturdays 2.0, happening in my special spot in Ciderville. All you need to do is Google Saturdays 2.0, and it's going to come up with some links. Check out the schedule. Tickets are now live. We're going to put a pin in that, come back to that, and talk about it after we go through our featured conversation all about Lairs, because that is also really cool. And guess what? Lairs and Company is going to be at Saturdays 2.0. And that means you have an opportunity to meet Lisa Lair Dunn. And since the Lear's family actually had George Washington and served him dinner, and he wrote about them in his diary, you could kind of start having bragging rights to, you know, never mind like 6 degrees of separation. You meet Lisa, you know, it's even closer. You know, there's like a symbiotic relationship, you know, bragging rights about you met somebody whose family served George Washington. I think that's pretty cool. I'm going to brag about it. I've been bragging about it. Are you kidding me? I love these people. This episode is just so cool because we kind of get into the technical piece. And at the end, I'm going to be telling you about a bonus piece with Larry Laird. So we're going to hang on to that here today. You're going to be hearing from Lisa. We're going to be talking about the North Garden, Virginia location where they both source the apples from that region and they ferment the cider and distill it. And you'll also be meeting her son, Gerard. He is a 10th generation Laird to be joining the company. So we're going to be talking about barrel aging and just a whole bunch of stuff. If you haven't been able to listen to part one of this, make sure to go back and listen to the previous episode on Cider Chat. And that was amazing, just hearing the history. I really dig it. So without further ado, we're going to get right into it with Lisa Laird Dunn, the Chief Operating Officer and Global Ambassador of Laird's & Company, based in Scobeyville, New Jersey, and North Garden, Virginia.
I'd like to talk about the Applejack distillation technique from back then to present day North Garden, Virginia, which is a major region for apple growing.
Oh, yes. That's why we're there.
Fantastic cider makers in that area. Mm-hmm. And you are, that's where your source is and the distillation itself. You're using a pot still? Is that true?
What? We have a pot still with a rectifying column.
Okay.
We have found, we've used pot stills, we've used column stills. We find that this hybrid that we have has produced the best brandy.
I don't know what a rectifying column is. What is
it? It's like a column still. So it's kind of a pot still attached to a column, which has all the different plates where it's going up through and heating. So it's like a hybrid. We actually had our pot still blew up maybe about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, dear.
Thankfully, no one was hurt. So we had Vendome, our still producer, actually create the same specs of what we had. So we still had the same, because the column part is from, it's post-prohibition. We moved that current still from Lyons, New York, down to North Garden, and it was refurbished in the 70s.
Wow.
And so that pot was from post-prohibition.
Very cool.
So it's the first time we actually have a new still. We've had it refurbished, but but you know, historically, sure, there were their little pot stills. You know, not quite sure exactly what still William and Robert were using.
Right.
But once they were here, they had the larger pot stills.
Okay.
And then we moved to column. We had both running. Different times. But we find that that makes the best brandy.
And is that a double distillation?
It's actually like a continuous distillation.
Continuous, okay.
But technically it is double, but we can't call it that. So it's more of like a continuous.
Right. Which gives you a finer and finer product. Mm-hmm. And not everybody has that opportunity to do that. And so that's where you notice a big difference in the brandy when you're able to really break it down and really get to the true essence of it.
And we also distill to a very high proof.
Yes, I want to talk to you about that because I'm very familiar with Calvados, which is a French apple brandy, which is typically around 40%. All of the Laird's products are around 80%. And higher.
Yeah, we have 40%, 50%.
Oh, okay.
We have all different age statements depending on the product. But when our apple distillate comes off the still, it's about 165 proof, which is very high. And it's one of the reasons our brandy is so good. Well, just to give you an idea of the whole process, I've been saying from the beginning, we only use fresh apples. It's a very labor-intensive process. The apples are crushed. We get our little apple mash, and we press them with a hydraulic press. That fresh juice, we then ferment. We have 14,000-gallon fermentation tanks. And once that's right about 6%, we move over to the still, bring it up to 165. We reduce that with pure water to 130, and then we age it. We put it in our barrels.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to go back here a little bit, mm-hmm. because I think this is important for the apple and cider heads listening right now, mm-hmm. in Ciderville. So when you ferment the cider, and are those outside fermentation tanks?
They are.
I've seen, it's kind of like giant milk jugs that you open up the little top to, and you look in and see what's going on.
Up until probably the 90s, we still had wood.
Tanks.
So we replaced them with fiberglass, insulated fiberglass now. So
wow, that would be neat. I wonder what happened to those tanks.
Yeah.
That would have been something to see. Anywho, the cider goat is fermenting. This is a very quick process from fermentation to the beginning of distilling.
It could be 7 to 15 days. It all depends on the weather.
Right. But that is pretty quick.
It is pretty quick, yes.
Because, mm-hmm. and I think that this is important for cider makers out there listening, that we would, for cider, we see that that's like primary fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into secondary fermentation, mm-hmm. and let it condition,
yes.
for 7 or 8 or, you know, mm-hmm. a year, et cetera. But when making brandy, it's a very quick ferment. You want to get it like right on when it's kind of slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Why do you just need to have a little bit of alcohol there to be able to begin the distillation?
What you have to be careful of is the volatile acids that start rising. Once you go too far, mm-hmm. into fermentation, and that will follow through into the brandy.
Right.
We need to cut. You can tell the difference in the brandy if the volatile acids get too high. So we definitely have to stop it once. We're always watching the volatile acids, and once it starts reaching a certain level,
mm-hmm.
you know, making sure the sugar bricks are all distilled, you know, fermented out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's like a 24/7 process when we're fermenting and distilling.
All hands on deck, mm-hmm. type of scene. So that's a key piece, because folks will think, oh, well, this cider has turned, and now I why don't I bring it to a distillery and they could turn it into brandy? And that's like the wrong way to look at it. You have to have a good product to make good product, right?
Exactly.
All the way,
exactly.
continuously.
If it's turned and it's too acidic, it's not going to make too good, mm-hmm. brandy at all.
Yeah.
Okay, Ciderville, so in that section, we were talking with just Lisa. And in this next section, it's going to be both Lisa and her son, Gerard, who came in. I want to say that we were recording on like the hottest day of the summer. So kudos to them all, because we had to turn off the air conditioning in the room to be able to give you the best quality audio, because that's how much we love you, Ciderville. So just kind of put that there. And we've been already talking for a couple hours, myself and Lisa, and that wasn't even the end of the day. I've just found this next part really cool, because we're going to be talking more about the distillation, more about the North Garden location in Virginia, where they are fermenting the cider, some of the barrel aging, just super fascinating. So hang on to your hats. Make sure that you take this little moment right now to pour yourself a little bit of cider, or perhaps some Lair's brandy or Applejack. And let's return with both Lisa and Gerard. Let's talk a little bit about the production of the Applejack, the apple brandy, because that is something that's, I know for my listeners, is really a big interest. You have this site here, which is the plant, is the bottling, and then in North Garden, Virginia, you actually do the distillation. You're using southern apples, Virginia apples, right, mm-hmm. which is a perfect climate. It's a huge region where there's cider trails now, a whole bevy of cider makers, mm-hmm. down there. I'd like to talk a little bit about the apples. Let's flip to that piece there. Are there specific apple varieties that you look at for your product, and do you separate it for the Applejack versus the apple brandy?
There is no distinction of the apples between the Applejack, the apple brandy. Our straight Applejack and apple brandies are all pretty much the same. It just depends on the age statement. So we use the same apples. It depends on, we blend more the barrels mm-hmm. and the time of year, because different apples ripen at different times of the season. And each apple produces a different type of brandy. Mm-hmm. The apples that we use today are much different than historically in the 1700s, 1800s, because back then it was pretty much just cider apples. Today it's the basic apples that you would find in a grocery store. Because of the tonnage of apples that we use, there just aren't enough.
Can you give us an idea of tonnage of apples that you use, just to give us a sense of production here?
Mm-hmm. Well, one barrel takes 7,000 pounds of apples. So that's one, it's a 55 gallons, 53 gallons of liquid of brandy. So that's 7,000 pounds. Each truckload that comes in has about 25,000 pounds per truck. And we, if we're really running well, we could get two of those a day.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it, about 3 to 5 million pound? What is it?
It's closer to three, anywhere from 2 to 4 usually, mm-hmm. depending on how much we're distilling and mm-hmm. and how well the
yeah.
how well the sugar levels are in the apples.
Because mm-hmm.
the higher the bricks for the sugar in the apples, mm-hmm. the more alcohol you'll get out of mm-hmm. our fermentation tanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the apples process better if there's higher brick. So, and when we're talking about the 2 to 4, it's tons of apples.
Okay.
That we're talking about. So we go through quite a bit.
Yeah. When does that start happening in Virginia? When you're not, I mean, we have summer apples right now, so you're not, I suspect, using those. So is this a late September, October process that's happening?
Usually the week after Labor Day is when we start crushing apples.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long does that go through?
We really run until the supply goes out. If the apples are coming in, we won't stop. Obviously, as we approach December, it gets cold up in the mountains down there. So that's also something that will make us shut down mm-hmm. for the season.
Yeah.
It also slows down the fermentation process.
Yeah, I bet it does. So you're in the fall, of course, and then that's it. There's still no storage down there. It's a one-shot deal for the distillation, mm-hmm. and it's held down there, or then it gets shipped up
It's here? A continuous process.
Okay.
You know, as we're crushing, fermenting, distilling, it's a continuous process. We barrel down there, and we store barrels.
Mm-hmm.
We have two aging warehouses, one in Virginia and one up here in Scobieville, New Jersey. So probably stays down there about 2 years, and then we bring it up here to create some more room for new brandy that we're distilling.
Okay.
But we also, within I guess the last 5 years, we started a spring distillation with cold storage apples because the demand for our brandy has grown. So we're running out of brandy. So now we do, I guess between mid-April to end of May, about a month and a half,
all right.
We do a short run with cold storage apples.
Wow, that's great news. A good problem to have, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, wonderful. So the sourcing of apples are all from, I imagine, that region, the North Garden mm-hmm. region. You're working with a number of different orchards down there. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Well, predominantly one.
Okay.
And then we have two smaller orchards that we work with. The larger one is Crown Orchard, which is another generational family business. I'm not sure what generation they're in currently, but it's been passed down through many generations. And we've been working with them since we've had the distillery back in 1941
mm-hmm. wow.
with the same family. There's another smaller orchard, Drumheller, and then there's a couple other little ones that the name escapes me at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It gets shipped up here and stored in barrels up here?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
We have a barrel warehouse located right next to our bottling facility, and the barrels finish out their aging process up here.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years in Virginia, and then 2 to 10 years up here mm-hmm. whenever we decide they're ready to be dumped.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of oak are you using?
We're using once-used American oak barrels, charred oak. They were first used for bourbon, so they're once-used bourbon barrels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That were a new American oak.
Mm-hmm. And the bourbon barrels come from what distillery, or is this your bourbon that you're not making?
They're from Kentucky. We have a distiller that actually distills bourbon for us to our specifications.
Wow.
So they're actually our bourbon barrels, but produced by someone else.
Oh, that's very neat. That's cool. Wonderful. So American oak. So it's kind of like American company all the way through. Mm-hmm, American apples, exactly. American oak going on. And the is there one particular person who's managing the barrels?
The barrel management is just a function of production. So our production team handles all of the racking system and the dumping processing. Mm-hmm.
And so once those barrels are used, then what happens to your used barrels? I'm just kind of curious for all the cider makers out there, like, well, what's going on with those barrels?
Our used barrels actually have a pretty high demand.
I bet they do.
Not only breweries, but distilleries, cideries, they're always in contact with us asking if they could purchase some because the apple brandy that the wood has absorbed really imparts some flavor on everyone else's products.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Now I'm afraid after this podcast we might get an influx of inquiries.
Well, let's hope so. That means people are listening. There are no planters being made out of your barrels. I know that for sure.
Yeah, not any long. Years ago, yeah, definitely, but not any longer. They're in high demand.
What are the size barrels? Are they all the same size?
Yep, yes. They're all 55 gallon.
Mm-hmm. All 55 gallons. Have you ever considered making a larger barrels? You know, we see some of these like big barrels in other countries and stuff. Is that ever?
It's never been discussed. Mm-mm. The main reason is just because that's
what you do.
And we get them from our bourbon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
bourbon distillery.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we played around, you know, with different barrels. And I know at one point in time, my father did try aging in new barrels, and felt that the wood characteristics overtook the apple brandy because it's very delicate brandy, and you know, the whole idea of producing an apple brandy is we want to ensure that you know, coming through into the final product is the apple flavor characteristics and aroma.
I want to talk about that, but I want to go a little bit back to, do you use a yeast when you ferment your cider? Or is that
that's a proprietary.
Is it proprietary?
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's right. We keep proprietary.
Okay, yeah, well, that makes sense, you know, because that really does affect
it does
the product quite a bit.
It does.
I'm always looking for terroir and to see how that lends itself, as we know that you're using Virginia apples and only Virginia apples.
Only Virginia apples. Yeah. You know, when we just told you the amount of apples that we use per season, you know, just the cost, especially today with the fuel costs, if we had to ship the apples here, we would be out of business. We couldn't afford it. So the processing area or facility of the main orchard is maybe 5 miles down the road. It's very convenient, very, you know, very short distance. So it's definitely ideal, the location that we are, because we're just surrounded by apple orchards.
I would say, though, even if somebody knew what the yeast was that you use, there is no way that they'd be able to replicate what you're doing.
Probably not.
It really is nothing. It just doesn't work that way.
No, because of the apples, the terroir in that area.
Still, which is like the OG of all OGs.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. It is definitely the OG, right?
Yeah.
You know, and as I said with the apples, you know, they are Virginia apples, but, you know, even though, say, a Gala apple from New York is different than the Gala apple from Virginia, which we use. We use a Gala apple. That's one of our apples. We use quite a few different apples.
Okay, wonderful. Are there any high tannin apples that you put into the batch? Because you're talking about really culinary apples, so high acid, but not really lending any kind of tannin.
Maybe the wine sap.
Wine sap.
We do get some black twigs.
Okay.
Not many.
That's popular down in
But
Virginia.
We do get some.
Yeah.
Yes.
And originally, it was all crabapple.
So, originally, back...
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Any crab that goes in?
No crab.
So it has really kind of moved away from that more tannic-based cider into the brandy. That's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about brandy now in modern-day America. We talked earlier about how, you know, the palate changes for consumers. What is important for consumers now to know about Laird's Applejack Apple Brandy that they might have misconceptions about.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you hear the term apple brandy, a lot of times you're thinking it's sweet, mm-hmm. or it tastes like apples. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is made from 100% apples, but it is a high-proof distilled brown spirit. So it's more on the lines of a whiskey, according to strength. But you're going to get those apple characteristics. Not going to taste like apples, mm-hmm. but you're going to get that aroma, especially once it's been aged. You're going to get more of the caramel and vanilla and spiced and baked apple mm-hmm. aromas that will come through. Unfortunately, there's products that are called flavored brandies.
Right.
You see it, apple, peach, all different fruits, you know, all different flavors. They are not a brandy. They're not, you know, brandy by definition, a fruit brandy has to be made from the fruit. So when it just says brandy, it's grape. Mm-hmm. But if it's apple brandy, it's made out of apples. Pear brandy, pear. So it has to be made from that fruit. Flavored brandies are made in a lab by a formula with neutral grain spirits and just flavorings, sugar, coloring, mm-hmm. and so forth. So very sweet, tastes like a candied apple if you're going to drink, mm-hmm. you know, the flavored apple brandies. So it's miles of difference between the two products. If you're going to taste our Laird's Applejack and think it's going to taste like a sweet candied apple, you are in for a big surprise mm-hmm. because it's nothing like that. You know, there's much more of a nuance. You know, you're getting the wood and the apple characteristics, and you know, it's a higher proof product. Unfortunately, many consumers are confused because they see apple brandy and they think it's going to be more on the lines of the flavored mm-hmm. apple brandy. Moving into today, you're now seeing more flavored products, like even flavored apple brandies. Mm-hmm. So you'll see, like, I probably shouldn't give an example, but I'm not going to say the name, but it's a great brandy, and it's flavored with apple flavoring or apple liqueur, and they're calling it apple brandy. So now there we have additional confusion.
Yeah.
to the consumer, and I will see that on drink lists in restaurants mm. that says apple brandy, and I'm like, I cringe
yes.
because that is not apple brandy. It is a flavored, mm-hmm. sweet, sugary product, mm-hmm. More on the lines of a cordial or mm-hmm. liqueur.
Right.
So there's so much education, and it's been an uphill battle, definitely for us.
Yeah, no doubt. And this misconception happens, it seems, quite a bit in the apple world around cider versus mm-hmm. hard cider. Americans are the only people in the world that call cider hard cider.
Mm-hmm.
They don't call hard, you know, hard wine.
No.
They call it wine, right?
Mm. Well, yeah, it took, you know, mm-hmm. cider was so prevalent in the United States in 1600s, 1700s, mm-hmm. 1800s. Post-Prohibition, when I had mentioned earlier mm-hmm. that you had so many of the bootleg operations go into the legal operation.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of adulterated, not good quality apple brandy mm-hmm. out there. So people moved away from it
mm-hmm.
into whiskeys.
Yeah.
So
A lot of catching up.
Yeah.
I think we are catching up in the U.S. for sure.
We are. It's wonderful to see
Black Twig, you know?
Well, yeah, that we're actually able to get them again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's outstanding.
And then just, you know, seeing the proliferation of the cideries. And mm. there's a lot of craft distillers that are now making apple brandy again.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an interest.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that with all this interest and new producers that we can create more education, educate the consumer.
Yeah, like we are right now. That's wonderful. Can we talk a little bit about your plans to make cider? Is that okay to talk about and get that?
Yeah, it's in the very new stages.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about
that. You know, we are going to press the apples, so they'll be our apples, and we have a local cidery that is going to work with us to, you know, through the fermentation stage and obviously the two levels of fermentation that we were talking about before
right.
that goes on with the the cider versus the hard cider that I'm using to distill for my brandy. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to age it in our apple brandy barrels.
Wow.
So it's going to be very unique. It'll be our juice, yeah, aged in our barrels, just working with a cidery that I guess it's been at least 20 years that I've been working with them. They've been using our barrels to finish, and they're located right down in Virginia, North Garden, Virginia, right near our distillery.
Can we make mention of who that is?
Yes, it's Potter's Craft.
Oh, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, they do a lot of barrel aging.
And yeah, yeah.
They're right on it.
They wonderful. Make some wonderful different ciders.
Oh, that's and great. Okay.
They just, I guess just about a year ago, they opened up their new tasting room.
Yeah, which is fantastic. Yeah.
It's like right around the corner from us.
Yeah, well, that timing is perfect. So you're really now adding a huge value-added product, which is at this point in time where finally we have a public that understands what cider is, mm-hmm, and there's a growing demand for quality cider. Yeah, you're hitting it spot on, and you have the barrels. So I guess you better start telling people, hey, no more barrels.
We need a few for ourselves, right?
Yeah, the demand is going to be up there. That is huge. When might we expect to see that?
We're going to start in the fall.
This fall, actually making cider this fall, mm-hmm, for next.
That's our plan. So we should have it for 2023. That's the plan.
Okay. And what kind of format would that be put in?
We haven't gotten that far.
Okay.
You know, they mostly use glass bottles. Mm-hmm. More of their flavored ciders are in the cans.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Very huge. Okay.
But we haven't gotten that far yet.
All right. That's big news. Yeah. Nowadays, you could actually find cider in most parts of the U.S., which not too long ago, there was only a handful. Mm-hmm. Back when Cider Days first started out, there was only about under 10 in the country, which is amazing. I want to, while we have you here, talking a little bit about legacy of your experience and your family and how that rolled out for you. I heard a little bit from your mother in terms of how she was brought on. She wanted to be a veterinarian and then slowly developed this interest and working with the family. You are now here. You're on site working here today. Oh, what is your actual role at this point here on site?
So right now my title is operations manager, but like any small family business, everyone wears a lot of hats, including me. So whether it's working with marketing and social media, right now I'm implementing a new software system. If we're short on hands, I'll get in the barrel warehouse and rack barrels and get dirty. So it literally just depends on what's needed for the day.
Sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what your mom kind of went through too. When you were growing up, how was your experience of having, you know, so much alcohol around, and how did you develop your palate for that?
So growing up, I knew, like, I was aware that my family owned a distillery. Didn't realize how cool it was probably until the 6th, 7th grade, when I really started getting interested in my history classes, mm-hmm, in school. Then I was making the connections with the history that our company has. And then that's when I really started to gain, like, kind of like a wow factor in my head, just kind of realizing how crazy and how special this company is. Mm-hmm. But in terms of my palate in alcohol,
yeah,
wasn't really exposed to it until I turned drinking age. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there was always Applejack and Apple Brandy at family get-togethers, mm-hmm, but I was never really interested in giving it a try until I turned of drinking age. And then that's when I started experimenting with cocktails, when I would visit accounts with my mother. And then that grew into me getting my own cocktail set and experimenting on my own at home.
All right. A cocktail set. Mm, is that like a cocktails. Rite of passage for players?
Absolutely.
I
bought it for them.
So. I love it. Great. And while we're on that topic, what is your preferred way to drink the product, like a cocktail? Is there a particular one that you like?
I prefer shaken cocktails. My go-to is usually either a Jack Rose or a Pink Lady. If I'm out at a bar and the bartender knows what they're doing, those are my two go-tos.
And how would either of those be made, like the Pink Lady?
So the Pink Lady is, it's primarily a gin cocktail, actually, mm-hmm. With apple brandy as well. I like to have the measurements switched, so usually gin is the base. I like the apple brandy as the base with gin as the complement, and then it has pomegranate grenadine, lemon juice, and egg white.
Very nice.
So the egg white really provides a great mouthfeel mm-hmm. when you're sipping.
Nice.
They go down way too easy.
Yes.
Way too easy. Well, that's why they're cocktails, you know. Mm-hmm. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your preferred way to drink the brandy, or?
Yes, yep,
okay.
in
not,
cocktails.
Not straight up.
I enjoy drinking it straight up, yeah. but the preferred is in cocktails.
Yeah. Would you say that your customer base is more using the brandy as a cocktail, or is it kind of evenly split in that way?
Absolutely. Today, especially the blended applejack and the straight applejack and, mm-hmm. and the lower age statements are in cocktails. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the 12-year-old 7.5 is more of a brandy snifter drinking straight. But with the resurgence in classic cocktails, that's where our growth is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from the younger generations where they're enjoying cocktails and cocktail bars. Mm-hmm. They're becoming exposed to the product, and then they're going out and purchasing it on their own. Back, if you asked me this question back in 1980, I'd tell you it was all shot in a beer.
All shot in a beer in 1980. Well, that makes sense, I guess, yeah.
But today, thankfully, it's all cocktails. Like, we kind of went full circle because the late 1800s, prior to Prohibition and post-Prohibition, it was all cocktails. And, you know, like, the Jack Rose, which is the most famous Laird's Applejack cocktail, is from 1905. But it is very similar to the Pink Lady. It's with the pomegranate, grenadine, and lemon juice. It could be lemon or lime. I prefer the lemon. And as, you know, the cocktail, when people started moving away from the classic cocktails, the fresh ingredients, mm-hmm. you had the sour mix coming out of the gun. You had, like, Rose's grenadine, which is not grenadine. It's just flavored sugar water. The Jack Rose drink disappeared because it was awful, absolutely awful. And now that the bartenders are back to using fresh ingredients,
mm.
you know, the bartender would be like, wow, this is a really nice cocktail.
Yeah.
You know, if you use the right ingredients, mm-hmm. the cocktails are delicious. But, you know, when mm-hmm. you had the fake ingredients, that's mm-hmm. a lot of these cocktails went by the wayside.
Yeah. It seems like the timing, again, is perfect for everything you're doing
mm-hmm.
around the cocktail, you know, love affair that we're having, and also the cider. So once again, you're kind of staying ahead of the curve in terms of the economy, which is smart business practices.
It's a good time mm-hmm. for us right now for the Applejack and the Apple Brandy and brown spirits in general.
Yeah.
You know, we had a really tough time there for a while, so it's nice to have consumers appreciate, because there's so much blood, sweat, and tears that goes into an aged product.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can make a vodka.
Right.
But the time, you know, and just the nuances of the distillation and the aging process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you put your product in a barrel today and you're not being able to sell it till 4-6 years down the road.
12 years or 10, right?
Yeah, so
yeah.
There's a lot of
Is that your longest, like, barrel aging? Because, you know, we see some brandies or Calvados that are, you know, 45 mm-hmm. years or mm-hmm. even longer. Is there anything like that you see in the future? No, you have your plan.
Yeah, we stop at 12. If you start aging longer, you start losing the apple characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
One difference between American apple brandy and Calvados is once we close the barrel, we cannot top it off with young brandy. Calvados, they can. They can replace some of their evaporation and angel share with younger brandy. We are not allowed to do that. So we're just losing the apple characteristics, and it's becoming more of just a whiskey. You're getting mostly wood.
Mm-hmm.
So we found that's kind of the year where we stopped. You know, we did, you know, during the 80s and 90s, early 90s, we had brandy here that was, you know, 20, 25 years old, just because it wasn't selling. We had
it
sitting in
our, oh my goodness.
You know, back in the early 90s, when you started seeing these higher age when you started seeing these higher age statements of whiskeys. That's because we had so much inventory in our warehouses. So we had the higher age statements and came out with these crew type products.
Right. Gerard, I'm wondering where you see your passion for the company and what some of your hopes are in the future, kind of carrying on the legacy. Is there anything that you kind of talk to your mom and say, you know, I really want to be doing this? And she might say, well, that's good, or no, we've been doing it this way. How's that going for you, and what are some of your hopes?
So my hopes is that we only expand the apple brandy category. But just like any category, it takes more than one company to do that. But the best way I think we can do it moving forward is word of mouth, just getting more people to know us, which is why I think our visitor center that we're in the beginning stages of building is going to be huge for us. That's my number one priority.
And, the visitor center.
Mm-hmm. And my mother would agree with me. We've talked about it. I think it would be huge for not only our local community, but for anyone that's visiting our area to then go and tell their friends across mm-hmm. the country. I want it to be a showpiece for us so that when people come here, it imprints a memory on us. They see our family. They feel the history. They see the mm-hmm. history. And I think that'll do wonders, not only for us, but for the category itself.
Absolutely. And that would be a visitor center and tasting room, I suspect.
Yep.
Right?
And a museum.
A museum, mm-hmm. right. All the above. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, and you're spot on. That's exactly what it's all about for growing that product. It will work wonders. And I see that we have the original barn out here where mm-hmm. your great, I don't know how far to go back, but mm-hmm. someone in your family was distilling all the way back. Are you looking at keeping that shell, or is there going to be...
Yes, we are keeping the original barn. Mm-hmm. We're refurbishing that area and then putting an addition on it.
Okay. And when do you...
Trying to keep as much of that natural wood as possible.
Yeah, I know.
It'll still have, like, the barn door look to enter. Yeah. So, yeah, we want to keep that as much as possible, a historical look. And in the original part from the 1700s, there's a root cellar. So we'll have, like, a plexiglass where you can look down into the root cellar.
Wow, a root cellar. Mm-hmm. So there's a basement mm-hmm. on
yes.
that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
From 1700, so I imagine it's fieldstone, right? Would that be true?
It's it's old brick.
Old brick?
Old brick, yes.
Yeah, wow. That's really neat. And what is a timeline for that to begin?
Well, we were moving forward before the pandemic, so we kind of put a halt on things. I just talked to our engineers yesterday, and we are 99% ready to go to the town to start getting approvals with the planning committee. We have a little layout over there that you can take a look at. Mm. So we're hoping to start soon, by the end of the year to start breaking ground because we should have the approvals by then. We do right now have a lot of support with the township committee, so I'm hoping it will move pretty smoothly, but you never know.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, that's really exciting. I can see the future is looking bright for Larry's. Mm-hmm. It really is. Cider, a visitor center, and the spirits, which are absolutely delicious. I want to thank you both for taking the time to speak to me today and to sharing your passion, your family's legacy with the listeners of Cider Chat. And I want to wish you the best of luck. I cannot wait to watch the next steps. I'm like, you know, on the edge of my seat thinking about how this is just going to bloom out. It's really outstanding.
Well, thank you. You know, I've really enjoyed chatting with you. It's been a lot of fun. I love sharing the history of the family and the product, and you know, I'm just a big history buff, so, and seeing people appreciate the history and the product is so rewarding for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I think that was pretty incredible, but it didn't stop there, because after that conversation, Lisa and I headed over to the main production facility where they do all the packaging and bottling from the barrels into the bottles. And that is where we met Larry Lairs. I have this little clip here, but I want you to know that at the Cider Chat YouTube channel, you could actually walk about with us as we are going into the main barrel aging building. You'll see the black, it looks like black soot on the outside. It's actually from the gases that were let off while the distilling was happening right next door so many, many years ago. We go into this room, and I have to tell you that it was like 100 degrees out. So it was pretty darn warm in there, but they were just so welcoming and took the time talking about the different artifacts there, and we walked the entire building. I had with me my 360 camera. So that's what that video is. I did the best editing I could do with my less than perfect editing software right now. But you'll be able to walk around with us even to the back wall where Lisa, who was the hero of the day for me, walked in front. It was a very narrow space, like, you know, shoulder width apart. We couldn't see, totally pitch black. She was walking in front because guess what lives back there in the darkness as these barrels are aging for 12 years plus? Spiders. So she's walking in front and I had Larry behind me. I just felt like I was, you know, the lucky Pierre in the middle because they were just, you know, kind of holding the flank. And to be able to be with them and giggling and laughing, I just, you know, wow. I was just wild, wild, wild. What can I say? So check that out at the Cider Chat YouTube channel. While you are there, please do subscribe. It certainly helps the channel, gets more visibility, and encourages me to keep on uploading videos like this and updating my skills. So let's go to that little clip now with Larry Lairs as we met him in the production facility, and you'll get a glimpse of our experience in the barrel room.
There he is.
Hi.
That's my dad. That's
hi. Hi. Pleasure to meet you, sir. So you're the master distiller.
No.
Or taster.
Well, I
heard that you
taste really. I'm the ex-master distiller and ex-master taster.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you could ever be an ex on that, but you want you have that skill.
I'm an ex.
Okay. All right. I believe you.
I'm teaching them.
Well, that's a key role to have, no doubt.
But this is the aging warehouse. Nice and black from the Angel Share. No matter how much you try to clean,
wow,
the brick, it becomes black.
Because of the fumes.
Because of the fumes.
Mm-hmm. It's
that's amazing.
Evaporating.
Well, why would you want to clean it? That's like history.
That's
right there.
What I love it.
And you got those old, like, iron, you know,
the
ribbing.
Iron bars.
Yeah, really cool. Okay, here's the Eternal Revenue Bonded Warehouse.
Number one.
Number one.
Number one. Holy smokes, huh? That's incredible. Whoa. Oh, yeah. How many barrels would you say you have?
In here?
Yeah.
Right now, about 2,300, 2,400.
Uh-huh.
And we have about 1,300 down in Virginia.
So the temperature here that you try to not worry about, right? You don't really have to worry about.
No.
Nobody in the industry temperature controls the aging warehouse.
Yeah, yeah. What elements, aroma, taste, profile, are you looking for in your, like, your 12-year-old, right?
I wouldn't know how to explain it.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, a little bit of fruit. But you don't get much fruit in the brandy, but a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's a brandy flavor, which is called esters. And you look for a full-bodied flavor for a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we know that we always use either late November or early December distillation for the 12-year-old because we know that it has what type of apples are in there. And it's the better apples from early apples to late apples.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had someone ask me all these, like, chemical questions, you know, explaining, you know, the tasting and everything that's in the brandy. And I asked my father, he's like, I don't know, I just taste it, you know, like, he just tastes and smells it. Like,
I'm not a chemist.
He's not a chemist. He just just from years.
You just know, perfect.
You
know? That speaks volumes right there.
All the way down the end.
Everything.
I will be the first to go through
this. Oh, you're really sweet.
I'll go through this.
I know. I should have put my wand first.
Oh my God! I've never gone all the way back here. Oops.
We know you'd be walking across back here.
No, obviously.
Picking up my feet. Oh my gosh!
I don't even know what the hell's back here.
Wow!
Woo! Here's a big spider web.
Really?
Got it.
We could go back the other way.
You want to go back?
No, I'm okay. I just want to make sure you're okay.
I think I got the big one.
Okay. All right.
It's an adventure.
It sure is.
I see a big one coming up.
Right? Oh my God, I love you for what you just did. And I will never forget you for that. Wow.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I'm thinking that maybe you have a little bit of a sense what it was like walking in the pitch black with Lisa knocking down the spiders in front of us and Larry behind kind of holding the flank. That is a memory I will not soon forget. Big thanks to the two of them and the entire facility there at Lairs & Company in Scobeyville, New Jersey. If you enjoyed this and you haven't listened to part one, do check it out at ciderchat.com. There's links in the show notes to this here episode 334. You can meet Lisa Lairs Dunn and other amazing cider producers and cider friends at the upcoming Cider Days 2.0, which will be taking place the first weekend of November in my special spot of Ciderville. Now, you might be wondering, where the heck is that? And that happens to be none other than Western Massachusetts. All the events for Cider Days 2.0 actually take place at one location called Hawks and Reeds Performing Arts Center. And that's all in the center of Greenfield, Massachusetts. We're going to be up on the top floor, which is fully handicap accessible with an elevator, and also across the street at the Pushkin, which is an old bank that is now part of the Performing Arts Center. So that day, on the 4th, which is a Friday, if you come early, you could check out Matt Kaminsky's third annual Pomological exhibition. That's going to be taking place out in Ashfield. So we do have some links to all that at the schedule for Cider Days 2.0 online. The link will be in the show notes to this here episode and at ciderchat.com. That evening, on the 4th, it is a Calvados and American Apple Brandy tasting at Hawks and Reeds. And of course, we're going to be having Lair's Apple Brandy. They're 7.5 Apple Brandy, to be exact. That same evening, it is a cider tap takeover at the Wheelhouse Bar at Hawks and Reeds. And that's where local cider makers will have their cider on hand. Oh my goodness, that's going to be so much fun. I will tell you more about that in coming episodes. The next day, on Saturday, we start bright-eyed and bushy-tail in the morning because, hey, you know, we get up early around here. And that's at 9 a.m. to 10. It's Orcharding for Homeowners with John Bunker. Then right after John, you're going to get to meet Lisa in person as she talks about the history of Applejack. And guess what? She's going to have three brandies to be tasting during that talk. Oh, that's going to be really exciting. And then later that day in the afternoon, it is a cider pop-up at the Pushkin. Go to the schedule page for Cider Days 2.0 to see the list of authors who will be speaking and the workshops. Do expect pours. And that evening, it is the return of the cider dinner. And it is the year of the Pomona because we're going to have six women producers all present at this dinner. Again, at Hawks and Reeds, and we're having a 5-course gluten-free gourmand dinner talking about cider. And boy, when we get to the dessert and they've kind of infused Lair's apple brandy into that dessert, yes, we are going towards greatness here, Ciderville, and I hope you can join me. Cider Days 2.0 is sponsored by Cider Chat. So this is a great way to support the chat by attending and also to support all these local makers throughout New England and beyond who are attending and sponsoring Cider Days 2.0. As always, there are regional events happening at all the orchards and cideries. Do check in with your favorite cider to see what they are offering that day. And as we move closer to November, the schedule at ciderchat.com for 2.0 will be updated, so do bookmark that page so you can keep on checking back. As I suspect, more events are going to be added because, let's face it, to try to get a cider maker to nail down something is kind of like herding cats. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. Like ponds, we love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
Ba-da-da-dum. We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!